B2. Number 24B.
She starts and she says that she has made in some experiences various observations, namely the uncovering of errors and sin in the patients and how she could help them. That her whole motive for giving a treatment and helping people was really to help and not to do harm. But she shows that it brought forth in some cases the very opposite reactions than expected. She says, why is this? She says, uncover error and it turns a lie upon you. That was her statement. Where she could see that by uncovering error, the patient could chemicalize, and by chemicalizing, he would just show forth the very opposites of what she was trying to do. It is that which one realizes very often in teaching, that the students cannot stomach everything, and therefore that which one has imparted in the best way one is able to do may not always be received openly, and that there is the possibility of some reaction. She says, at first I was amazed at this reaction. But she would analyze further and further and see that her students have taken advantage of this phenomena and have taken advantage, namely, that they could also do wrong in their treatment instead of good, that they could mentally impart something evil instead of something good. And she said, until she experienced that, especially with one or the other of her students, she would never have believed that one could betray such a wonderful, helping, Christ-like method as she had given. And so she could see suddenly how malpractice could really hold sway over the patient's mind. And therefore, she said, I have to investigate this. See, her mentality was at the point of mind, of investigating, of inquiring, of gaining more insight. See, that has all to do with mind. And so found out that the mesmerists would influence the thought and actions of others. At that time she could see that on the mental level the mesmerist could influence the patients for something wrong instead of helping him. Why was that possible? She could see that because she had to reduce the mind healing, the divine mind healing, to the point of argumentation, so that the students could at all grasp something of what she was teaching, and reduced it to the point of argumentation, that the malpractitioner could use false arguments and to convey and transmit false thoughts and false arguments. You know how at the beginning she was even teaching that the practitioners should rub the skull of the patient, and by rubbing the skull of the patient, the practitioner should argue aloud for health of the body. But she could see that the mesmerists at the same time were thinking the opposite, and thereby imparting really the very opposite. That they were whispering, as she says, falsity into his thoughts, and the falsity into the thoughts of patients, until they were dependent upon the practitioner and therefore entrusted in the practitioner, being completely blind to what the practitioner was doing with them and how he was using them. So she found this new phenomena of malpractice, which changes the patient's thoughts and beliefs concerning any person or anything, or even according the beliefs about his body. She says, now, what is wrong about that whole thing? And so she could see that the mouth practitioner loses its ethical standard. That because the practitioner has not an ethical standard, he imparts what he has in his own mind, in his own heart, in his own intentions, and so was transmitting the evil which he had in his own heart to the patient, and controlled the patient with error instead of with truth. You see, this was the price she had to pay, so to say, for having to reduce divine mind healing to thought healing, to mental practice, to argumentation. The moment we reduce the divine mind healing to argumentation, you don't know if you argue right or wrong. The moment we use the methods of argumentation, there is no more a standard, and you argue according to your own thought. So malpractice is really to do evil with a mental method. I want to stress mental. Could you hear that up to now it's all about mental and mentality and mental argument? Yes. So she said, if I teach really mental practice through argumentation, then naturally I would have to ask, well, what sort of mentality does the practitioner have if the practitioner is not an angel and has in his heart all those thoughts of dishonesty, revenge, falsehood, impurity, malice, egoism, envy, hatred, ambition? These are the things which she enumerates. Says the practitioner imparts his whole mentality to the patient. We can see how dangerous mental practice is, and how dangerous it is that one thinks well, one does one's best, and may not be aware that all one's whole mentality is transmitted to the patient. So this was her first discovery. Discovering the mental activity of the practitioner's mind to do evil, to possess the patient, to execute authority over the patient, to handle the patient according to his own mind. This was in 1875. The next edition you have, the second edition, in 1878. And in this edition she changed quite a lot. In this edition she had already for the first time a separate chapter called Mesmerism. And it's also about 70 pages long. But here she puts down the accent on distinguishing between what is a metaphysician and what is a mesmerist. Between, therefore, mind, small m, and what she called at that time divine mind, divine capitalized, mind not yet capitalized. For a long time she didn't capitalize mind, because that was still not quite clear in her presentation. So she gives here a new account of so-called mesmerism. It is full of the challenge. You can hear the struggle between good and evil. The challenge between good and evil, the great challenge of what is metaphysics and what is mesmerism. Because there was no clear-cut understanding what is mesmerism and what is metaphysics. Because the mesmerists called themselves metaphysicians, and the metaphysicians called them mesmerists. And they felt that that is the same thing. She points out that the students mingle metaphysics with mesmerism. Can you hear the tone of spirit? Spirit which separates. Here she is uncovering the opposite. Instead that they were able to separate metaphysics from mesmerism, or the mortal mind from the divine mind, because they couldn't separate that and mingle that, they were not even aware that they were doing something which was not according to Mrs. Eddy's teaching. She asked herself the fundamental question, where did this come from? And she answers it by saying, well, I have taught really that mind influences the minds of others, and that mind controls the body, that mind is power. But the misunderstanding is that the student did not know what kind of mind she meant. And so she gives a great exposition that the mind which she meant, which was still written with a small m in both cases, you see, was still written in, and therefore it was misunderstood. And so she begins to argue it out and say, naturally, when I say that mind heals, that mind has power over the body, that mind is the great influence, she said, I naturally meant that mind which is truth. I meant naturally that mind which wants to do good, and good only, and that she was unaware that her system could be traduced, perverted, or falsified. Whereas the mesmerists, she says, they mingle, really, these two concepts, and they have just one concept, namely, they build on mind, actually still small m, and practice just ad libitum mind power. See, can we see now how dangerous it is to let the student at that low level of showing that everything is mental? Because if we just show him that everything is mental, he says, all right, everything is mental, there is only one mind, and with that mind, he means mind with a small m, and that includes good and evil, that includes falsities and everything, so that he can play with his mind any trick he likes. And that is what we have with the mesmerists. He builds on that human mind and practices that human mind, and the result is, and she introduces for the first time the term malpractice. It is mal, evil practice. You can hear spirit is good. You see, spirit is good. Now here she uncovers animal magnetism as a practice of evil and calls it malpractice. It's quite interesting to read this second edition, because she gives quite a minute account of her step-by-step discovery. For instance, she said that since writing the first edition, she has made another observation. She observed the crimes of another mesmeric outlaw, namely, that the malpractitioner can do more evil without a sign than with it. Up to that time, the metaphysician or mesmerist both were manipulating the patient, were rubbing their skull, and she said, I have found out in the meantime that he does not need to manipulate, nor that he has to declare something aloud, but that with his silent arguments of evil, he can even be more powerful than with an audible argument or with manipulation. So she called it now mental malpractice. And that she meant, with that she meant silent malpractice. And she says it is criminal in the extreme. It is more dangerous because it is hidden and cannot be brought before the tribunal. At that time, it's quite interesting, She tried to bring those malpractitioners before the state law, before the court, in order to have them judged on a mental issue. Now, this is naturally very difficult, to bring somebody and accuse somebody that he has been thinking wrongly, that he has influenced somebody by silent arguments. How can you prove that? See? And so this was a method which she at that time tried at one time to bring forth God, but soon saw that this is even more dangerous because, after all, you cannot deal with such a criminal as you can deal with an ordinary criminal who does something objectively wrong. She calls malpractice really dishonest mesmerism or demoralized mesmerism. See, because the ethical value of the malpractitioner is bad. She says, you are not even allowed to call that mesmerism or to be a mesmerist because Quimby was a mesmerist and he was a good man and he was a lord to himself. But these people said, well, Mrs. Eddy had gone through the school of Quimby and had learned there quite a lot, and what she teaches is pretty well the same thing as Quimby, rubbing the skull, arguing aloud the truth to the patient and so on, and so they saw nothing wrong by calling themselves mesmerists, because this is what Quimby at that time did. So she put up for Quimby and said, no, he was a good man, he was an honest man. She goes on to say that the malpractitioner destroys himself in the end, because he uses evil more and more in his own consciousness, therefore he begins to destroy himself. Then she raises the question, but how can we protect ourselves against such mental malpractice? And here we have the first indication. She said the best protection is by learning the science of life. Then she says it is impossible to be malpracticed. So she says your protection against malpractice, and just remember, I'm not teaching what is true today, I'm teaching the steps. So she said at that time the protection towards malpractice is not through hindering the malpractitioner to do his practice. Said this is not the way to hinder the malpractitioner to malpractice. He says, your protection lies not by breaking into the personal realm of thought of the malpractitioner. You see, by hitting back into the thought, and therefore practice on the malpractitioner, or through controlling his thought. Said, this is not the way that you say, well, he is malpracticing me and I'm going to control his thought that he cannot malpractice. She was already at that point where she began to see this is not a method. But, she says, by teaching, you can always hear, instructing, teaching the individual and the community and show them what malpractice is. That the individual and the community, she felt, must be awakened to the secret method of malpractice. To rely, she says, on reason in order to protect yourself against malpractice. She begins slowly and slowly, you see, to introduce to the student, say, your only protection which you have against any malpractice, against any mental influence, is that you are right within your own thought. That you learn the science of mind, that you rely on reason, then you don't have to fear malpractice. Therefore, she says, a real metaphysician cannot malpractice. It's quite impossible. A metaphysician, a real metaphysician, has not the choice to say, well, this person, this patient I'm going to heal and to practice right, and to the next person he says, I'm going to malpractice wrong. Because what one has in one's own mentality is what is influencing the other. I don't know if you know that incident which she recounts. I think it's in the Divinity Course, where she made an experiment at home, in her home, and asked a student of hers that they would go into separate rooms and make an experiment. She was quite a big experimenter. Into separate rooms. And she said, "We both are going to malpractice each other. I'm going to malpractice on you, and you are going to malpractice on me. And then we see what happens." And so both went into their room and started working. You see? And the effect was that Mrs. Eddy felt the malpractice, and the other felt always better and better. And that was her explanation, which she wanted to prove. She wanted to prove, can I, if I have an ethical, spiritual sense of being within me, out of my heart, if I have in my heart purity, good, can I, even if I think wrongly, can my thoughts do something evil if within me my whole being is good? And she couldn't do evil, in spite she was thinking all sorts of evil things on that person. That person always got better and better, you know, he felt freer and freer. Whereas she could see that other person who had not attained that spiritual stature, naturally her whole influence of evil would come to her. And naturally she could have protected herself, but she could see that she herself, that's what was her experiment, that she herself could not malpractice, even if she tried to. She could not. See, that's the great point which she brings out already in the second edition, that a metaphysician, somebody who loves truth with all his heart, with his being, and not with his head, not with his thought, cannot malpractice, cannot do any harm. So we don't need to fear that in the measure as we see that within us is the structure of being, then we don't need to fear that we can do any harm to anybody. That idea is just going out, and if somebody chemicalizes it, it's doing good. It's just blessing that somebody. So a metaphysician cannot malpractice, because his source is really the healing power of truth. Yes. Then in that same second edition, she goes on and says that she made a new discovery in 1878. See, in that year where she wrote that book, she said that in the summer of that year I made a new discovery. Besides having seen that silent malpractice is possible, and the silent malpractice is even stronger than audible malpractice, she said, I made still another discovery. Namely, how can we detect the malpractitioner and to uncover his evil purpose? How can I know that somebody who is malpracticing silently, how can I feel and see who the malpracticer is and what his arguments are? And so she begins to show for the first time what later she would call divine mind reading, because Jesus could read error with the divine mind. Namely, the divine mind knows only its own ideas, and these ideas always analyze, uncover, and annihilate its opposite, and so bring from undercover really the error. Just as if we calculate rightly, or if we have to check a calculation or a bookkeeping, if we have to check it, we go with the right concept of arithmetic, and that right concept of arithmetic will detect an error if there is an error somewhere. So she presents here that she says, the divine mind pours upon the age light and healing. And this light and healing of the divine mind uncovers the one who does evil and the evil purpose. See, that's what later then she called divine mind reading. She put it like this. She says that through this method, the thoughts, the motives, and the fears that mortal mind embraces will become as apparent to mind as a material object is to personal sense. So it will stick out in the mind. You just feel it. You just sense it. What is wrong? Because right always uncovers the wrong. If I have a good musical sense, I can hear a music play, and my good musical sense says at once, oh, there is a wrong tone. And this is the method she had seen and discovered in 1878, that through the mind, pouring out light and healing, if we have just always that sense that mind just knows its own ideas, that is the truth which will bring to the surface in our mind that error which needs to be destroyed. She says, when the ability of mind to detect what mind is doing becomes more general, it will be all that is required for self-protection. So here the self-protection is seen in seeing that the divine mind knows its own ideas, and that is uncovering the evil. Yes. All right. This is the second. See, the first was first to investigate, to search, and find out that such misuse of mentality is possible. Then in the second place, she begins to see that what is necessary is to define clearly what is malpractice and what is right practice, good practice. What is metaphysics and what is mesmerism? So as to keep these two very distinct and have two distinct concepts. Then comes the next edition, the third edition, only a few years later, 3 years later, and that third edition shows the whole subject of animal magnetism from the point of view of soul, by uncovering the opposite of soul, namely malicious animal magnetism. Here she changed the title from mesmerism to demonology. Here she gets very fierce about malpractice. Here malpractice is not good enough anymore. It must be demonology. And she writes not only 15 pages, but three times more. 46 pages. I have written here that the accent is on the malicious abuse of mesmerism, on the modus operandi of malicious malpractice. Here she uses now for the first time mind capitalized and shows that the basis of malpractice and of malicious malpractice is animal nature. I just quickly go through what she says in this chapter, because this is very interesting. This is usually more or less that tone which still today students of Christian Science have in mind when they are thinking about animal magnetism, about malicious malpractice, and so on. Because it's quite a fierce chapter. And when you read it, you still can read it. The Rare Book Company has reprinted that third edition. And you say it's gruesome, and it shudders you around the back. gruesome. Oh, you know, she just now recounts all the many experiences she had. Here now she uses the term demonology in order to bring out the illicit, forbidden cruelty of mortal mind. Now, here she gives and says that she has now found that this malpractice can take on aggressive forms, malicious, devilish, vulgar abuse of mesmerism. So it's not enough to have mesmerism. At this point, you see, she gives now this intentional, malicious, devilish, vulgar abuse of mesmerism. And instead of the few pages she had before, she gives now 46 pages of describing, because she just felt she had a hell of a life with her student, Kennedy.